This is Kids These Days.
It's a matchup between free-range kids and overparenting on today's show. Talking with us about today's differing perspectives on child raising are Lenore Skenazy and Michelle Mitten. Both women write well-read blogs about parenting and think a lot about why they make the choices they do for their own kids. Also on the program today, listen to adults reflect on how free-range they were as kids in another When I Was Young feature. And we'll hear from parents across the state about why they helicopter or they don't. Plus, we'll wrap up the hour with a Power of One story about a man who's helping kids when free-ranging could get them into trouble. All that and more today on Kids These Days. Hi, I'm Shanna Sheehy. Well, as always, we want to know what you think, and in the case of today's topic, where you stand on this issue. Do you let your kid walk to school by himself? How far in front of you do you let your kids get when you're enjoying a mountain hike? And if your child didn't do her homework, would you finish it for her? How much responsibility do you deliberately give your kids or deliberately restrict? And why are you making these choices? Do you think about it? Send your thoughts our way, post directly to kidsthesedays.org via Facebook Connect, or write an email and send it to mail@kidsthesedays.org. It's time to introduce our guest this hour. New York City columnist Lenore Skenazy joins us by phone today from Canada. Lenore has written for everyone from the Wall Street Journal to Mad Magazine. No one particularly cared until 2008 when she wrote a piece for the New York Sun about letting her 9-year-old take the subway alone. 2 days later, she found herself on the Today Show, MSNBC, Fox News, and NPR, and then on media worldwide, defending herself as not America's worst mom. But Google that phrase and there she is for 35 pages. She founded the blog Free Range Kids to explain her parenting philosophy. Safety is good. She believes in helmets, car seats, and safety belts. She does not believe our kids need a security detail every time they leave the house. The blog led to a book, which together led to the anti-helicopter parenting movement. These days, Skenazy gives free-range kids lectures everywhere from Yale University to the Sydney Opera House. In January of 2012, she will be hosting a reality show helping families to go free-range. The rest of the time, she lives in New York City with her husband and two now teenage sons who are not quite as free-range as she'd like, but she says she's working on it. Thanks so much, Lenore, for being with us today.
Oh, thanks, Shanna. Thanks for having me.
And also joining us today in the KSKA studio in Anchorage is Michelle Mitten. Michelle was born and raised in Alaska. She's a freelance writer and a mother of four who began blogging in 2005. Her blog Scribbit was featured as one of the top five motherhood blogs by the Wall Street Journal and again, most recently, in Inc. magazine and Better Homes and Gardens. She wrote a successful book on blogging called Blogging in Pink, and she often speaks at blogging and social media conferences and writes about food, travel, life in Alaska, and parenting. And thanks so much to you, Michelle, for being with us as well.
It's nice to be here.
Okay, well, ladies, let's talk about free-range kids first off. Lenore Skenazy, I think you're the one to take that away. I'm wondering, can we get a little bit of the history for those in our audience who aren't familiar with how you were sort of shot to fame after this article that you wrote for the New York Sun?
Right. Well, I think you said it in the intro. You know, I'm a New York City columnist, and so one day I wrote a column just about my life, which was that my 9-year-old son had been asking me and my husband if we would please let him take a subway ride home from someplace he hadn't been before. He just wanted to find his own way home. You know, he's a guy who could read maps, and he was always on the subway with us, and he loved public transportation. He's still alive, loves public transportation. And so my husband and I discussed this, and we decided, you know, he's ready, we're ready, we see what the subway's like. It's not the one you see in The Taking of Pelham 123. It's the one 5 million people take every day that's just kind of a way of getting around. And so I took him to a very safe neighborhood where Bloomingdale's, the fancy schmancy department store, is. And I said, okay, hon, today's the day. Here you go. And I left him there. And sure enough, he got his way home pretty darn easily. It's maybe a 10-minute subway ride at most, and then a bus ride across town. And a bus that we're always on or always waiting for because it's really slow. And when he came home, he was very pleased. He was just happy as could be that he had finally been allowed to do something that he felt he was ready for and that we thought so too. I didn't write about it instantly because it didn't even strike me as newsworthy. It was just a, you know, just sort of a private milestone. But then, like, I don't know, a month or two later, when I had absolutely no ideas of what to write about that day and a deadline looming, I wrote the column about him. And then, as you said, everybody jumped on it because I think because the, you know, I've thought about this for a long time for two reasons. One is that the New York City subway has sort of been iconized as hell. You know, whenever you see it in a movie or something, you know, there's like a close-up on the rat, or there's the, you know, the thunderous rumble of the subways, or there's a terrorist or a madman or somebody throwing up at least. And then also the thing that interests me more is the idea that nine-year-olds are no longer considered, you know, children who could be competent in the world. There's sort of no distinction these days between a kid who has turned 8, 9, 10 and a kid who is 2, 3, 4. We think we have to be observing them all the time, watching them all the time, taking them everywhere. You know, if we leave them alone in the house, people question, why did you do that? If we let them go on their own play dates, people say, aren't you worried that something would happen to him on the way? What I hadn't realized until this became so controversial is that really, we have started infantilizing our kids like sort of astonishingly, and it happened pretty recently in American history. And so that's where I took off with Free Range Kids, is just trying to figure out how did we get so nervous for our kids every second of the day that we treat them like babies, even when in earlier generations we would have been expecting them to grow up.
And the generations, we don't have to go very far back about, you know, for example, my grandparents and what they were able to do at ages. They were able to
probably
ride.
Your parents.
Yes, and exactly.
Probably you.
Parents. Yes. So, you know, so that just right there, I have children, so we're talking about four different generations.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a huge span of time for such
a big
cultural shift. I mean,
you
we're talking about a cultural shift.
Oh, can I say, there's once this really great article in an English newspaper that actually interviewed four generations of the same family, and it was called How Children Have Lost the Right to Roam in Four Generations. And when it interviewed the grandfather, the great-grandfather, who was in 88, I think, he used to walk about 6 miles to go fishing at his favorite fishing hole, wherever it was, right? And then his son, who's now in his 60s, remembered walking about a mile into the forest and playing with his friends, you know, cops and robbers or whatever. And then the mom, who was, I don't know, maybe in her 30s, used to at least walk to school, which was maybe half a mile away. And then she won't let her son, who was 8 at the time of the article being written, off the block.
That's a big change in a short period
it's
of time.
It's from 6 miles to half a block. And it is so dramatic. And, you know, and if we had been engulfed in, you know, an enormous war, or there was pestilence beyond the stop sign, or there were roving bands of banshees, or some reason that it made sense to hold our kids so much tighter than an earlier generation, fine. But actually, here in America, you know, we have been enjoying a 40-year drop in crime. Crime is lower than when most of us parents were growing up. Crime is lower than it was in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. So to pretend, or to actually not even pretend, to be convinced that, like, I'd love to let my kids out, but I can't because times have changed, is just what I want to remind people, that times have changed, but they've changed for the better, even though it doesn't feel like it. And then what I talk about a lot is, why doesn't it feel like it? Why do we feel like we really do have to hover over our kids when our mm-hmm. parents didn't do that for us?
Well, listen, let's talk much more about that, about why we have those feelings, what the truth is about change, how safe are we, and so forth, because that's such a huge part of this conversation. And mm-hmm. I also want to get Michelle Mitten in this conversation, but first,
who has
I think
the
it's
the best name, Michelle Mitten. My God, it's alliterative and it's adorable.
And she's adorable too, I can vouch for that. But first, let's listen to this, because this will set the stage for some of the unique circumstances we might have in our state.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a look at how in Alaska ideas about free-range kids here may be a little different. Alaskan parents face some different factors in deciding whether to send their kids off to play or do something independently, where strangers aren't a danger, moose or bears might be. Kids These Days contributor Jessica Cochran spoke with parents across the state to find out how free-range their kids are.
The way Phil Burdick sees it, kids these days have less freedom than he did as a kid. He lives in Sitka, where he's co-principal of an alternative high school and dad to two girls, an 8-year-old and an 8-month-old.
Even when I was 5 and 6, I was walking to school alone. And I don't see kids doing that at all.
In fact, lots of middle-class parents don't even let their kids ride the bus home from school. Instead, they pick them up, creating traffic jams. Most of his students come from lower-income families.
Well, they don't have the resource to spend with their children, so their kids are more free. So I see a lot of young people, 8, 9, 10, at the playground in our neighborhood alone, if they are poor or working class. But those same kids I see with their parents if they are middle class.
He thinks generally we trust our kids less to make their own decisions in life and turn out okay. Some kids are in lots of activities and are shepherded from place to place.
We don't just believe in our kids' ability to make their own way, and so we make their way for them. We put them in lessons and we structure their time and think for them ultimately. And I think that that is a shift in culture. We didn't used to do that. And potentially it's about, you know, this getting, not potentially, it is about getting ahead and making sure that, you know, our young people are getting into the right schools and getting the right future opportunities.
Burdick and his wife are starting to teach their 8-year-old more independence, how to bike safely on their busy street so she can go back and forth to summer camp on her own. Anchorage mother Valerie Waldrop hasn't quite hit that milestone yet. Her boys are a little younger, 4 and 6. The older one was in kindergarten this past year, and for the first time, she saw her parent peers sending their kids out to play in their neighborhoods unsupervised. For her, it's too early.
I'm not anywhere close to letting them play outside by themselves. I don't know what the year is. Maybe 8 or 9. But maybe when he turns 8, I'll feel the same way.
Moose and bears play a big part in that. Her neighborhood has some bold black bears who hang around, especially on garbage day. She and her kids practice what to do if they see one.
We practice all the time, my husband and I, with them. If you see a bear, we have an order of things that we do. You know, stop, look, think, so that no one's screaming or running. And luckily, we haven't had a close confrontation, so things are going pretty well with the wildlife. But I wouldn't expect my 6-year-old to do the right thing necessarily if he turns a corner on his bike and there's a black bear, not to scream and run, which is not what you want to do. So, yeah, that's a big part.
A former Outward Bound instructor, Waldrop is preparing them and herself for more independence in the future. For now, she's fine with being cautious.
Recently, I attended a conference, and one of the guys who was speaking, he was raped as a 7-year-old in a neighbor's house by an older sibling. And when I heard that, I really felt affirmed that I was doing the right thing by really keeping an eye on them. I feel like it's my main job is to supervise them and to protect them. And we really just get one chance to protect them really well. And that situation, that's permanent.
Fairbanks mom Teresa Bacher fears that something that might happen too, but she fights it. A former radio news host, she blames the media.
I feel like there is in the media a tendency to overhype scary stories about your child's safety. So even when he was a baby, I was sort of telling myself, like, you know, just because an abducted child or a lost child makes the news doesn't mean that's going to happen or even that it's statistically likely to happen.
She says all her mom friends aspire to giving their kids the kind of freedom she grew up with.
Slamming the screen door on the morning of a summer vacation day and running out into the neighborhood and being gone for hours.
But they're concerned and taking it slowly. She hopes by the end of the summer, her 7, almost 8-year-old will be confident enough and ready to go on bike adventures with his neighborhood friends. 15 years ago, Bacher lived in Galena, where kids had tons of freedom, often staying out playing until 1 a.m. in summer. That's pretty typical for rural Alaska. Hooper Bay teacher and mother Kate Koski says kids can't wait for the good weather so they can play out.
You know, driving through town, I'll see kids of all different ages playing together, and they'll be playing with all kind of found objects, stick, string, old tires. They'll be making boats out of sleds. They'll be wading in water if it's warm enough. And, you know, they generally play out for a lot of the day during summer.
There's no pavement in Hooper Bay and few cars. The houses are close together, and everyone knows each other, so help isn't far away. All the adults keep an eye on the kids. Occasionally, a parent will call over the VHF radio for help tracking one down. Her six-year-old heads outside with older cousins that way. She describes her two-and-a-half-year-old as a danger magnet, so she's supervised closely in town. But at camp, out on the tundra, the two girls can roam together. There aren't many bears or deep ponds out there, and as long as they can hear her call, they can explore. When they leave Alaska to visit relatives in the lower 48, they have to stick a little closer, and it takes some time to adjust. She thinks the way they live in Hooper Bay is pretty special and unusual.
Out here, it's not so much of an idea or, a philosophical statement. It's a given that kids need to be let alone to experience the outdoors.
Koski wishes the school system could find a way to recognize that intrinsic worth of being outside. So the skills these kids pick up in their wanderings were reflected in their test scores and grades. I'm Jessica Cochran.
For parents or families that are concerned about bear interactions, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has several Bear Aware workshops coming up. They often include a hands-on demonstration of how to use bear spray. In South Central, there's one Saturday, June 11th at Potter Marsh and Thursday, June 16th at REI. For more dates and statewide locations, head to our website. That's kidsthesedays.org. This is Kids These Days. I'm Shanna Sheehy, and today I'm talking to Lenore Skenazy and also Michelle Mitten, who's in the studio with me. Michelle Mitten, you are the blogger behind Scribd. But you have raised four kids and are currently raising still your children here in South Central Alaska. And before we got underway, you mentioned that you live close to South Anchorage High School, which is at the foothills of the Chugach Mountains.
Yes.
So this concern that we heard in that previous piece about some of the bear concerns or the moose concerns, some of these big wild animal concerns, is that something you found yourself working around when you were raising your kids when they were younger?
Honestly, we lived downtown for quite a while when I had small children too, and I never really considered bears as a problem. I mean, maybe it shows that I'm not a very capable parent. I'm not sure, but I really didn't consider bears too much. Probably because two of my kids always were in groups, and they were playing with groups, and I don't know. I guess you're always weighing risks in your mind, and I weighed it and said, the odds of them getting hit by a bear are pretty slim. So I didn't deal with that.
I actually have the statistics, believe it or not, on black bear death. Do you want to know?
Sure.
Absolutely.
Because they're very reassuring to me, believe it or not. I know I'm a New York City gal, but in the summer we go up to the Catskills, and there are bears, and I've seen them. I actually saw them on the baseball field where my kids play baseball, and I did not like seeing the bear one iota. I hate bears. I'm sorry, bear lovers out there. I just can't stand the fact that they exist near us. But then I just read the best article that said, in the last 100 years, in Canada and the United States altogether, over the last 100 years, how many people have been killed by black bears? We're talking about 100 years, all of America, all of Canada and the United States. How many people?
Are we guessing?
You're guessing, because I'm going to shock you. Yeah.
150.
No, I'd say probably like 20.
63.
Okay.
63, which means that, like, years go by when there's nobody. I mean, it's like two-thirds of a person, which I guess is even scarier. But but the point is that, I mean, that actually reassured me. I know that it's always easier to imagine something grisly, so to speak, than it is to imagine bad things not happening. Yes. But you really have to think of, you know, we have 300 million people down here, and we've had millions and millions of people for the last 100 years, and 63 have died at the paws of bears. And so you just have to get a grip sometimes on the odds being really, really in our favor. And if you're only thinking of the anomaly, you know, the worst case scenario, well, you'll never let your kids outside at all.
So why does it seem like there's a resistance by today's parent, and we're just talking about an archetype of today's parent, to not want to overcome that urge to make decisions on that off chance?
Not to overcome. I mean, I really feel like my new working theory is that we're sort of creating an OCD culture, you know, like obsessive compulsive, where you're supposed to be insanely worried about things. Like, I mean, you're supposed to be insanely worried about germs, right? If you weren't, why would you suddenly feel like this same species that has existed for, you know, a couple million years suddenly needs Purell, right? And I think that we're encouraged to think that way about abductions. I mean, children used to be wandering around outside, and as I said before, the crime rate is lower now than it was when we were growing up. And our parents did not always picture, you know, predators and abductions and just the worst case scenarios. But because those are in front of our faces so much, like that one woman who was interviewed, who was a former newscaster, was saying in this interview right before this, you know, the media is so ubiquitous and so unceasing in its portrayal of the very worst of the worst things that could happen to kids, because that's what keeps us tuned in. You know, if you're talking, I mean, like, I'm sure some people are listening now to, you know, how we can sort of relax around our kids and give them a childhood. But if you were doing a special on, you know, tragedies of childhood, you know, five children who never came home, you would have more listeners, because it's very compelling. It is so upsetting to all of us that we listen. It's almost a form of tribute to them to listen. And when you are surrounded by that all the time, which we are on the news, and then CSI, and then Law and Order, and Bones, and Mentalist, and, you know, there's so many shows that's like the go-to storyline, because it's the easiest way to keep our attention, and it ends up building up in our mind. We just have files and files in our brains filled with the stories of J.C. Dugard and Elizabeth Smart and Maddie McCann, and it's like the fact that I can mention these names and you know these names too just means that they've become part of our everyday database that we consult. And we think about it like, can my kid walk outside? Well, what about Maddie McCann? What about Elizabeth Smart? And even though she wasn't even walking outside. And then we say no, because it's easier to say no, and it's socially acceptable to say no, because it looks like you've thought about it, and you really care, and if you really care, you wouldn't let that happen to your child, and you're probably letting it happen to them if you let them outside, so don't.
I think that to address the kind of the question too, that what do you do? How do you talk to the parents who feel this way? Mm-hmm. Often I think it's a matter of weighing the cost. I mean, there's always that fear of what could happen to my child. And mm-hmm. But in my mind, I'm always weighing what happens if I don't allow them this independence. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, in a lot of ways, the greater risk nowadays is to have children raised who are used to having other people do everything for them. My parents were pretty good about raising us to expect to be, you know, pretty much to be an adult at age 18. You know, yes, mm-hmm. we still had contact with mom and dad, we still do. But mm-hmm. at 18 was really kind of that ushering into adulthood. And really, that's really complete by the time you're 21. And to me, that is so critical that it's mm-hmm. worth the slight risk that you might have over physical, you know, mm-hmm. things that come along. And you just
also, it's upsetting when we keep talking about it like a risk. I mean, I do believe there's the risk of keeping kids at home and having them get, you know, depressed and diabetes and obesity and all that. But when we keep talking about there's a slight risk outside, the minute people hear the word risk, everybody has been sort of primed to say it's not worth the risk. And it's like, let's not talk about it as risk. Let's talk about it as like reality check. The reality is that, you know, we are living in the safest times in human history.
Well,
and I think it is great when you point out what gets lost if you don't take advantage of that. I mean, aside from the fact that you're just squandering it, I mean, like anybody in any other era would have been delighted to grow up when there's this little crime and diabetes and, you know, diphtheria is gone and polio is not something you have to flee every summer. You know, so you're squandering it. But also, the way you just talked about it before, that the trade-offs are so forgotten by people who say you can't be too safe. And it's like, well, we are safe already, so too safe just becomes missing out on everything.
And talking about reality, you know, today, according to the Justice Department, there's a 1 in 1 million chance of a child being taken by a stranger.
Mm-hmm.
And that 90% of sexual abuse cases are committed by someone the child knows versus a stranger on the street or at the park.
Versus stranger danger.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of these grand ironies that's like, can you imagine if if one of the fates was looking up there and saying, I'm going to make the safest era in the world. You know, children will barely, you know, most children will make it to kindergarten. Most children will make it to, you know, age 18, you know, and like, let's see what happens. And then another one of the fates cackles, they're going to be more worried than ever. And it's like, really? Why? And it's like, oh, they'll come up with something.
So
and we
do, I mean, is that it? Do human beings need to feel worried? Do we need to worry about stuff?
I think so.
I think it's a
matter of knowing exactly where your risks are.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I tend to be very, very lax. Lax isn't the right word, but I'm very
relaxed.
Thank you. With my children, letting them go. I have sons who are, you know, preteen and teenagers, and they want, but not old enough to be legally allowed to get a job, which is another issue in itself.
It frustrates
me.
I agree. Why not? Sure.
Yeah. And so they want to go out and they want to earn money mowing. So they go and they make up a flyer and they pass, they walk through our neighborhood, canvassing the neighborhood, passing out flyers door to door. And I know people that they just faint at that, because who could they encounter along the way? It's worse than, it's worse than trick or treating by themselves.
Oh, because they're going up to neighbors.
Yeah. And yet we live in a very safe neighborhood, and they're very, and they're doing something very productive. But yet, at the same time, there are risks that I don't take risks. There are things I don't take risks with. For example, you really can't control what is in people's homes anymore. And with the media, like, for example, the internet is a direct conduit into your home for anything that anybody wants to publish out there. And people forget that it's like this huge, you know, funnel that dumps anything that you want to Google right into your home, which in a lot of ways, to me, is a lot more terrifying than the guy that might be, you know, wandering the streets looking for children to prey on. You know, so I don't really let my kids go off and use computers at other people's homes. I don't let them hang out with older siblings that I may not know anything about, you know, things like that. Just, there's a lot of risks there that I really am careful about, because to me they present, you know, really we're talking a moral issue rather than a physical issue.
Wait. I have to pause a moment now, because it sounds like free-ranging is freewheeling, anything goes, and it absolutely isn't.
Okay, we'll describe that.
I mean, since I coined the phrase, and actually trademarked it. I have a friend who's a lawyer. The whole idea of free range is that I think of it as an old-fashioned childhood as opposed to an anything-goes childhood. And our parents knew that they had a job to do. They had to train us how to cross the street safely, because then they were going to let us. But they didn't just say, go out there and, you know, good luck, and, you know, if something's barreling down on you, you probably should run. I mean, they taught us how to cross the street safely. They taught us you can talk to strangers, but you can't go off with strangers. They taught us how to swim. I mean, I really think that our job is to prepare our children from the outside world, and if one of the things that you don't want them doing is, you know, going onto certain websites or whatever, or you want to talk to them about that beforehand, of course that's your prerogative as a parent. You know, you prepare them, you treat them as children who are going to have the world out there. And so the best example I can give is that one of the parenting magazines had the stupidest thing, a tip once. They're just filled with all these tips. And one tip was that whenever you're going with your kid, a young kid, to somebody else's house, you should bring with you in your purse shoelaces. Why? Why?
I can't even fathom why.
Yeah. My friend said, so you can hang yourself on the board. That's wrong. The answer, according to the parenting magazine, to tie shut the other person's cabinets.
Oh, my.
Okay? Oh, my is right. Because what that's doing in front of you, what that's doing to a parent is telling them, generally the mother, that your job as a parent is to child-proof not only your own home, but somebody else's home. You're supposed to child-proof the world. And all I want to say is that free-range kids posits that it is our job to world-proof our children. Mm-hmm. So if you teach them, you cannot go in other ladies' cabinets. You cannot drink from what you find under the sink. You know, you cannot climb the bookcase. If you teach them how to be safe in the world, and especially when you're talking about, like, you know, even any kind of sexual assault or being preyed upon, teach them about don't let anybody touch you where your bathing suit touches. I mean, you really are allowed to instruct your children in how to be safe, because that will serve them better than either you being with them every second of the day, which you won't, and helping them cross the street, or you just saying, go out, honey, I'm going to be drinking in the den, which is what some people think that free-ranging is, and it's totally not.
Well, you are listening to Kids These Days on this listener-supported station. Today I'm speaking to Lenora Scanese, who's the woman behind Free Range Kids and trademarked it, a nationally known and followed blog, and Michelle Mitten, who may be better known to some as Scribbit, a well-known Anchorage-based blogger who's also a mother. We'll be back in the second half of the show to talk more about free-range kids versus overparenting, and to see whether these competing ideas are so very opposite, or whether they cross paths every now and then, or maybe something entirely different. Also coming up, another installment in our Power of One series. This time we profile a man who runs an after-school and summer program for at-risk youth.
I have built a treehouse. I have built a treehouse. Nobody can see us. It's a you and me house. I have built a treehouse.
Nobody can see us, 'cause it's a you and me house. Been climbing rocks and stones, been collecting broken bones. I've been swimming across the lakes just to find this perfect place. I got lost into the woods, I've been covered up in mud. I've been going through a lot just to find this perfect spot. I have built a treehouse. I have built a treehouse. Nobody can see us, 'cause it's a you and me house. I have built a treehouse. I have built a treehouse. Nobody can see us, 'cause it's a you and me house. I've been climbing rocks and stones, been collecting broken bones. I've been swimming across the lakes.
We're back, and you're listening to Kids These Days, where today's conversation is about styles of parenting. Of course, there are so many, it's impossible, I'd say, to try to discuss them all today, so we're taking two that contrast. Lenora Scanese, the mother behind Free Range Kids, the book and blog, and Alaska's own Michelle Mitten, also known as Scribbit, and a mother who blogs about motherhood in Alaska. You too can take part in this conversation. Do so by writing an email right now to mail@kidsthesedays.org or by going to our website at the same address and using Facebook Connect to log in and comment right there. And before we get back to our conversation, let's first hear from some voices. We'd love to get as many voices as possible on each Kids These Days program. So today, producer Sarah Gonzalez asked a few adults about how much freedom they remember having in this installment of When I Was Young.
I grew up in Southern California. I had quite a bit of freedom. I was the oldest child, and I was expected to take care of the younger ones. And I was able to walk to school when I was in kindergarten by myself. And I was able to cross the major highway with the light by the time I was about age 6 to go to the library or the park, which I loved to go to. And I had a lot of freedom. I walked everywhere, I rode my bike, and I took care of the younger kids.
Were your parents cautioning you? Were they afraid? Was there any kind of sense of stranger danger, anything like that?
No, we were just told, you know, don't talk to strangers, don't take candy from strangers, that sort of thing. But there were a lot of mothers home then, too. So there was always people looking out for you as you walked up and down the streets and so on back then.
I grew up in California. My friends, when I was young, all lived on the same block or an adjacent block. And when I wasn't home for the requisite period, such as getting up, eating, I was up and down the blocks with friends, and my parents were nowhere to be seen other than in the home or at work. There were places that we were told not to go, and what comes to mind and embedded in my memory is the riverbed. There was a river that flowed by a mile from the house, and we were always cautioned not to go there. And so once in a while, my mother would find sand in my shoes, and she would confront me and show me the sand and would let me know that my father was going to deal with this as soon as I got home.
Spokane, Washington. I was able to play in the neighborhood with other children, and I walked back and forth from my elementary school, which was probably, half a mile. But I had lunch at home every day and walked back and forth. I don't remember getting into any trouble in particular, but we stayed fairly close to home, and we were warned, you know, not to get into cars with strangers, etc.
I grew up in Boston in a section called Dorchester. I went to the parochial school, so it was only several blocks away, and I often walked. But my parents both worked, so I let myself in and out of the house. We would come home for lunch in those days, and I would have to let myself in, make my lunch, close up the house, go back to school, that sort of thing.
How old were you when you were doing that?
Six. Yeah. My mother constantly drilled into my head, I think, whenever I left the house, don't talk to strangers, don't accept candy, you know, that sort of thing. But it was also, in some ways, I think the neighborhood was like a village in that, you know, I had relatives living around me and the neighbors all watched out for you. So I think the risk was kind of minimal anyway. No, I don't think the world's any more frightening today than it was then.
I grew up in a suburb of Detroit in Wayne County. Definitely play outdoors after school every day and on the weekends. Going to school, we had to be bused because we had to cross the main intersection to get to our school. But we would, when we came home, we definitely would play outside and before our parents got home from work. And I don't think kids today play outside as much as kids used to. And I think that that's just kind of a culture shift of the different electronics and the games that kids can play nowadays. And so I think in general, kids are not as free to express their imaginations as kids past generations have been able to do. And I don't think it's necessarily a restricted thing, but I think it's just a different culture.
I grew up in Gardendale, Alabama, a little north of Birmingham. I grew up on a big farm. My family, it was my great-great-grandparents. Everyone knows everyone. My aunts, my uncles, we all kind of live together on this big farm. So my experience as a youth was your parents just say, hi, how are you? And you would wander over to your aunt's house or you'd wander over to your grandparents' house. And everyone kind of knew where you were and they all kind of kept tabs on you and you would go over and visit people. And it was very kind of open and free.
Those were perspectives collected by our producer, Sarah Gonzalez, about adults remembering back to when they were young and how much freedom they had. Lenore Skenazy, I'd like to invite you to comment on some of those comments.
Yes, I was so interested listening to them. The first one, with the kid who would, I guess not a kid anymore, you know, who'd walk to school at age 5 or 6, what we forget is that most of us did. I mean, I was certainly walking to kindergarten at age 5, and back then, the crossing guards were kids. They were sixth graders, and they helped the first graders and kindergartners like me cross the street. And that's the point. We just forget that kids are competent at all. We are really selling them short. I think that's what Michelle was talking about earlier, too, is that we act as if, or maybe it was one of the other people we were listening to, we act as if our children are totally incompetent. They couldn't possibly walk to school. They couldn't, you know, they're too spacey, they're too, you know, too nervous, or we couldn't teach them how to cross the street, or we act like they couldn't wait at home. They're going to catch, you know, they're going to start fires, or we couldn't have them mow the lawns like you were talking about. Who, Michelle, wasn't it you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who was talking about letting your kids go and have a lawn mowing business, which is only wonderful. You know, it builds confidence, it builds work skills, responsibility, can-do-ship, entrepreneurialism. I mean, it's everything that we want our kids to be doing. And yet so many times what we've done is institutionalized our fear for our children and made it so they can't do the things that they really are competent and ready to do. And when you were talking about your son's going and doing the putting the flyers around the neighborhood, one person once sent to my blog this really interesting cultural artifact, which was that they had a story, a video, a short video from Sesame Street that had been remade for Sesame Street. So the old video was, "We lost our dog." The kids talked like that. And it showed two kids, you know, ages 6 and 8, something like that, whose dog had been lost. And so they went to the printer and they got flyers printed up, and then they went around the neighborhood putting the flyers on, you know, storefronts and on lampposts. And in the end, you see them reunited with their dog, and it's very heartwarming. But when they remade this video, because it was starting to seem really old, I mean, my God, they went to a printer, like the printer had to take the letter D for dog and O for, you know, really ancient, it seemed, even though it was my own childhood. And then in this one, we lost our dog, too. And so there's these two children about the same age as the original video, accompanied by their mom. And their mom is also strolling the baby in the stroller. So there's an excuse.
So it's been redone.
It's been remade. They just
so that they have an adult companion.
And there's an adult companion. And I don't think that Sesame Street was willing to air the old one anymore. Not because it looked, you know, ancient and frayed and yellowed
just, it's a liability.
Antediluvial. But it's a liability. They can't endorse the idea of children doing anything on their own anymore. And that's why, when we talk about how come parents are so afraid and how come they've changed, you know, originally I just thought, like, well, I guess we've all gone crazy, but it's not us. We're surrounded by this message from Sesame Street on that, you know, anyone who lets their kids do anything on their own is just asking for trouble. And then there's a lot of devices being sold out there that reinforce that fear, because then they can sell you something. You can sell people on a GPS device for their kid's backpack if you make them think that without the GPS device, you're just letting your kid wander off, and what happens if they're abducted? You won't know until too late. And they are selling little tattoos that you can use to put your phone number on your kid's arm for a couple weeks. And they're selling leashes. They sell devices that make a noise if your child wanders literally more than 10 feet from you. The assumption being that, therefore, if I did let that happen and I didn't have an alarm on them, I guess that's irresponsible or anything terrible could happen. So we're sort of hammered over the head with the idea that responsible parents are either literally or electronically attached to their children at all times. And so that's why it feels that way. That's why we feel like we can't let our children go outside, because we've been told if we do, not only are we responsible, but we've been warned and something terrible may happen. Where do we think confidence comes from? You know, it is self-confidence. It is not parent-assisted confidence, because you can't assist them in doing that. That's why I'm just so amazed that we want to raise these strong, self-reliant kids, and we're so worried that we're not, that we give them, you know, extra trophies and gold stars, because we see that they're missing something. But what they're missing is the chance to be independent and get it on their own, because that's the only way you get it.
So, ladies, how do we parents or caregivers break free of some of these messages and these ideas that we need to be more involved and more attached as parents and really adopt some of these ideas we've talked about in this program this hour and let go and give our kids the opportunity to be independent and grow that confidence you're talking about, Lenore?
One of the things we were just talking about before that Michelle was mentioning was, you know, about being connected to neighbors, and that when her kids went, you know, sledding or snowboarding, they ended up connecting to a neighbor. And so it's, you know, we say, like, maybe we can't trust our children anymore outside because there's no more neighborhoods. Well, it's like, of course there's no more neighborhoods if there's no kids outside. So one of the really easy baby steps that I suggest in my book is, you know, one of those hours that you were going to devote to another hour of CSI with the dead bodies and the maggots and the, you know, the bruises that have been festering for days on the dead body. Yuck.
Under the black light.
Right, under the black light, really. I never knew so much about maggots until. Instead of that, turn off the TV and go outside and actually be in the real world instead of the scary world that they are creating for us on television all the time. I mean, people say I live in La La Land because I believe in people and I believe in my neighborhood. It's like, well, what land do you live in? You live in TV land.
Well, I mean, are we watching? Can we blame us all on TV, or is that too simplistic?
No. I'm just saying that this is one of the nice things you can do to start fighting back against this culture of fear that everything is terrible. It's like, you know, your kids will be safer if they know some neighbors and can call for help, you know, or if you feel like you were safer because when you were growing up, you knew, you know, the people down the block. Well, get to know the people down the block now. Turn off the TV. Go outside with your kids. Say hi to the neighbors. Get another kid and go to the park with them. You know, have them play for a while. I started this thing called Take Our Children to the Park and Leave Them There Day, which was just a couple weekends ago. And my idea was that on a sunny Saturday morning, you know, that we all agreed on, which happened to be April 21st, but you could do it in your neighborhood whatever day you want, everybody brings their kids to the local park And that way, the kids meet each other, and they get to play with each other. And so not only are they coming up with something to do, which is already something that would be wonderful, but also they're meeting each other, and they have fun, and then they'll meet again the next day. And then you start creating this neighborhood that we all wish we still lived in, which is the old-fashioned one where kids went outside and played with each other. So what I talk about is connect your neighborhood to the other kids, to the other parents, and things seem less terrible than they seem if you're staying at home and if you're watching TV.
Mm-hmm. And let's give Michelle Mitten the last word today.
Oh, thank you. The thing that I kind of clued in that I liked about Lenora's story is how she talked about how she knew her son at age 9. She knew his ability. She knew his personality. She knew everything that was there to make this a successful story. And I think as parents, if we really focus on getting to know our children well, I mean, they're people. They're not just our children. They're individuals, learning their strengths, learning their weaknesses. I mean, if you have a child who's really a risk taker, who's a danger prone kid, you know, maybe, you know, being more aware of that. If you have a child who's really wants to earn their independence, then go with it. I mean, knowing our children is going to help us be able to tailor the situation to meet their needs. And it's really about them, not so much about us.
Well, I'd like to thank both of you for being on the program today on Kids These Days. It's truly been a pleasure. Michelle Mitten is an Anchorage mom who blogs about motherhood in Alaska as Scribbit. And Lenora Skenazy is the woman behind Free Range Kids, the blog, and the book. And she joined us by phone today from Canada, where she's currently working on a television series about this very same topic and took a break today to talk to us. Thank you both so much.
Oh, thanks, Shannon. Thanks, Michelle.
Thank you.
And Kids These Days will link to both Lenore and Michelle's blogs from our website. That's kidsthesedays.org. We'll also post web extras that feature parts of this interview that didn't make it into our broadcast hour. Free Range Kids versus Overparenting is the talk of the hour today, and our final thoughts on that are contained within a story of the power of one. As we mentioned earlier this hour, sometimes free ranging is a choice made by conscientious parents who have thought long and hard about their choices in child rearing. But sometimes free ranging is something that happens when kids come from families that are unable and sometimes unwilling to keep better tabs on their kids. When kids are at risk of spending too much time unsupervised and on the street doing stupid things and getting into trouble, there are people and programs out there who strive to provide safe and positive environments as an alternative. Many of these outreach programs are associated with community organizations or faith-based groups. Others start off as a way for kids to find inclusion within their cultural identity. That was the case for one Anchorage outreach program that got started a handful of years ago. It started as the Poly Club and was created for Polynesian kids to do traditional dance. Its original founder is a well-known Anchorageite named Mao Tosi. Soon, the Poly Club outgrew its Poly name and became AK Pride. AK Pride is open to kids of any background and ethnic descent, and now it does a whole lot more than Polynesian dance. It eventually found a new adult to take the lead, a man whose dedication and heart is the subject for this story of the power of one.
Pride stands for people representing integrity and diverse everything. My first name is Junior, literally Junior, and my last name is Giso, G-I-S-O.
And do you go by June?
Yeah. People just call me Junior, June. Program coordinator or supervisor, basically babysitter. I watch your kids.
So tell me, what is this place that we're hanging out tonight?
Let me see. It's just a place for the kids to come and practice. We don't teach them anything. We just give them the means to explore what they already have. So I can't break that. So, yeah, these kids got the wrong idea. If they think I'm going to teach them.
Junior Gisa is a big guy, and that's why he's making a joke about how he doesn't teach the kids at AK Pride the breakdance moves.
So, yeah, 3 to 5, they show up. Whatever it is they choose to do, they do it under my supervision. I just make sure they're actually practicing or you know, training rather than just hanging out.
AK Pride has about 50 or more kids involved at any given time. Most are middle and high school students. Because AK Pride has space in the Northway Mall in North Anchorage, it draws from Clark Middle School and from kids who come from Mountain View, a lower income neighborhood. So when you say, like, you're not teaching them anything, but you give them a chance to do what they're already doing, mm-hmm. What kinds of things are kids doing here?
The Clark kids are breakdancers. Some kids from East High are choreography dancers. And then there's the graduates that are musicians and singers. They come here to practice with me. And then I think today I got a couple kids from East High School coming in to learn the piano and learn the guitar and stuff like that.
Well, it sounds like it's all about expression.
Yeah, pretty much. Because these kids got a lot of anger, a lot of emotions, you know, bent up inside. And we just give them a place to let it out. What's even good about it is when we host community events, it gives a chance for these kids to show what they've been trained to do, what they've been practicing to do, you know, lets their parents see the kids actually devoted and dedicated to something. And, yeah, it gives them a chance to do something, you know, as far as being in the community and stuff.
So kids here are expressing themselves. They're doing something constructive, it sounds like. But you also say you're babysitting.
Yeah. Showing these kids that authority doesn't always have to be feared. It could be respected. We show them that we care for them. We try not to intervene or as far as their learning process. That way they can say that they learned it on their own. And it wasn't forced upon them. It wasn't drilled onto them. Yeah. They do it with b-boying, with dancing, with choreography dance, go ahead, with music, with rap. When they leave this room, they're tired. They have no energy. They ain't trying to go and hang out at the corner of the street until they want to go to sleep. When they leave this room, everything's out. They ain't got no strength left. They go home, they go straight to sleep, and they wake up for, you know, the next day with no risk. It's just here, home, that's it. Some of these kids got way too much energy and way too much time on their hands. So, yeah, that's what we do here. We let them use up all their energy and use up some of their time. Of course, we do let them, you know, we host like 15 minutes, 20 minutes of study time. They can't do anything unless they show me they're done, they're working. So. Well, a lot of them has the excuse, I did it in class. I'm like, no, where's your homework? But, yeah, I just try my best to make it an enjoyable environment, so I'm safe for the kids. That's about it.
What's your name?
My name is Kong Zhang.
So what are you doing here?
I dance all day because, you know, it's really fun and active for me.
So what inspired you to do breakdancing instead of something else?
Well, my friend. Well, he taught me how to jerk, and then that's when January...
Wait, what's jerk?
Jerk is like, it's like a hip hop and breakdancing and all that combined. It's just putting into your own swag and style. By every month, I try to learn new stuff, like a new equal move to show my friends. Real dancers, like those who can listen, can hear it. If you have a pure heart, you'll become a b-boy. But if you just dance, you're just a breakdancer. You're just like, dance to express, not to impress.
So are you a breakdancer who's trying to be a b-boy, trying to reach that level?
Yes, really hard.
Kong is 14 years old. He comes to AK Pride with a whole group of kids who are of Hmong descent, just like him. Kong is so into his goal of becoming a b-boy, he tells me his dancing history broken down by the month and the day. His goal, he says, is to achieve b-boy status by his freshman year, so he's got until the end of the summer.
I'm Joshua Fatia. I'm 19 years old, and I've been with AK Pride ever since 2007.
Josh has been in AK Pride since it was called the Poly Club. He says while he liked doing dances from his culture, it was cool when the club changed to AK Pride and started incorporating hip-hop music, choreographed dance, breakdancing, and other forms of art and expression. So you've graduated from high school, and it sounded like maybe from Pride, or is there such a thing as graduating from AK Pride?
Nah, it was just a program, just to do something after school. And then after I graduated from East High School, it just carried on after high school, yeah.
So way back when you were in high school, why did you start coming here in the first place?
I started coming here just to not go home, pretty much. No, I was joking. Just to do something after school instead of, you know, just hanging out. So it might lead to doing stupid things. So I just started joining after school program, and I just joined just to stay out of trouble, pretty much. And just to have something to do at school.
So that's why you got involved. But yeah. What about now that you're,
now?
You know, more adult than you were 4 years ago?
More adult now. Now it's...
You know what I mean? Like, why stick around, you know?
Yeah. Before I was just joined to do something. But now, you know, seeing how much it affected kids with what they're doing after school. And, like, you know, instead of making bad choices of, you know, going outside and, you know, on the streets doing something, you know, you come here and do something positive and you know, give back to, you know, those kids that, you know, just want, that used to be like me, you know, just looking for something to do. And instead of, you know, me looking for something to do, I'm doing something about, like, those kids looking for something to do. And just trying to turn everything to a positive way somehow through music, art, dance.
While June says it can be hard to feel upbeat when he regularly sees young people who don't get a lot of support at home, he says he's glad he has something to give.
Some of the parents, they tell them, we're going to AK Pride. Like, I don't care. Just as long as you're not home before I get home. Just as long as you're not outside before I get home. So, like, I'll send them home with the packets. Some of the parents won't even read the packet. They're just like, here, go. What time will you be home? Like, oh, 9, 6, 8. So it's kind of sad, at least when I look at it.
You get bummed out sometimes?
Yeah. Like this Kong, I asked him, are your parents going to sign this? He's, they don't really care. You know, it's just as long as I'm not home before they get home. I'm like, wow. Some of them get here. I tell them to check in with home. They said, oh, our parents don't care. It's all cool. I'm pretty sure some parents do care. I used to work through the Christian groups, and I had programs, outreach programs. And I met some kids where, yeah, the parents wouldn't care where they're at. The parents didn't even know they were part of an outreach. And I'm pretty sure half of these kids, the parents don't know where they're going and where they're at.
You can watch the AK Pride Kids in Action. We'll link to a video they put together from our website at kidsthesedays.org. Find other stories of the power of one there as well. You can search easily from our homepage. That's it for Kids These Days today. Next time on the program, we're talking about Alaska's refugee families. Find out about the numerous families who come to our state to seek refuge from persecution and strife in countries far from the frozen north. What brings them to the 49th state? How do we Alaskans help out? We'll learn about an Anchorage-based refugee music program for kids, and we'll meet a refugee family from Nepal and learn their story. There's a lot more coming that hour as well. Join us next time for all of it. Kids These Days had help today from Sarah Gonzalez and Jessica Cochran in Anchorage. Sarah Gonzalez was today's technical director and is, as always, our online editor and content manager. Lost Lander composes, performs, and produces all of our original program music. Check us out on the interwebs anytime. You can listen to previous episodes and find us through social media. We're out there working on stuff and making it available to you all week long, even when we're not on the air. Tomorrow, be sure to check out kidsthesedays.org because we're debuting not one, but two new blogs, both written by high school students. That's right, these cool kids have agreed to give us an inside look at the life of a high school senior. They'll take us with them through the SATs, homecoming, college applications, prom, graduation, and getting ready to leave home, all while fighting off senioritis. Check out Patrick on the Edge by tennis team captain Patrick Walgren and Citizen Senior by student body president Ariana Kokalis. Both of these new blogs debut tomorrow on kidsthesedays.org. I'm Shanna Sheehy, your host and the technical editor of this show. Thanks so much for spending time with me today, and we'll see you next week.
The ideas, opinions, and commentary you hear on Kids These Days are those of the hosts, guests, and contributors, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of its funders or broadcast partners. The Content Producers Guild is solely responsible for what you hear on the program. Kids These Days is made possible by a generous grant from the Association of Alaska School Boards and its Initiative for Community Engagement. Kids These Days is produced in partnership with KSKA 91.1 FM Anchorage, KRUA, and the UAA Department of Journalism and Public Communications.